Yeah, I told my wife there would be a big shirt tonight, and I'll expect 1/10 next week. Now, I'm actually a little serious about this. This is an interrelated cheer, so I'm going to talk about something that if you haven't attended the past 10 sessions, it may not be so useful. Right? So one has to think about that, too. Simply come when you have nothing else to do is not always a valid way of going to a cheer. So please keep that in mind. This is not a cheer for, once in a while showing up. Although the Maisa, we're almost finished with Tanya, so when we go to another topic, maybe it'll be more shayach to have sporadic attendance, but certainly for this topic, it is not worthwhile, so please keep that in very, very serious mind. Okay. So the part of the Sefer that we are looking at is already the fifth and last chelek of the Sefer, which is Kuntres Acharin. Remember the five chalakim of Tanya? Three of them were printed in the lifetime of Rav Shneur Zalman, and two of them were printed after his death. The main part of Tanya, which is 52 prakim, is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book of the middle of the rotors. And the Balei Tanya develops what is the Avodas Hashem for people who are Beinonim. The second part of the Sefer, which is only 12 chapters, is Shar HaYichud V'Amuna. That's the idea of what is the nature of the unity of God and the concept of how does an infinite God interrelate with a finite universe. The third is Igeres HaTshuva, which is an essay on the different ways of doing tshuva. And those three chalokim were printed in the lifetime of the Mechaber. And then after he died, two other portions were added to the Sefer by his sons. The fourth chelek was Igeres HaKodesh. Now, why Igeres? Even the Babaji Rebbe said he had a tzorichi, and why is it singular, not plural? Igeres HaKodesh were excerpts from different letters that the Alter Rebbe had written to his Hasidim over many, many years. And the sons were malakate from the letters by taking out the people, etc., the various Musar and Hashkafa and Kabbalah that would emerge from those letters. There are 36 letters in Igeres HaKodesh, and the overwhelming majority of the letters actually deal with one topic over and over again, and that is the great importance of the mitzvah of tzedakah. And the Alter Rebbe was an unrelenting fundraiser, and he himself had given up virtually all of his wealth. In fact, I think I'd mentioned before that the Alter Rebbe has a famous psak in his Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a Shulchan Aruch, and the Gemara says, "Hamavazbeis al yavazbeis yaser mechaimish." A person should not give more than a fifth of his assets to tzedakah, right? L'chatchila, we give meiser, and if you could afford it, you give 20%, but you're not supposed to give more than 20% because it might reduce you to poverty, and it's not proper for you yourself to become poor, right? This is the Gemara in Ksuvas and the Shulchan Aruch Sopaskins. But the Alter Rebbe says in the Shulchan Aruch that if you are giving tzedakah in order to get an atonement for your averos, then the same way you would spend more than a fifth if you needed a life-saving operation, certainly you would do that. So too, you can give an unlimited amount of tzedakah if you have averos for which you need a kapara. Now, this is truly an exception that swallows up the rule, because which person doesn't have averos which need a kapara? So essentially, the Alter Rebbe more or less maintains that for the vast majority of people, maybe 100% of the people, basically the din of chaimish doesn't apply, and you can give as much as you feel is necessary in order to receive a tshuva. And l'halakha l'maisa, this is what he expected from his chassidim. His chassidim were not wealthy at all. They were not wealthy. They were very, very poor. They lived primarily in Russia. And yet, over and over and over again, they are called upon to send money to Eretz Yisrael to support the poor communities in Eretz Yisrael and elsewhere. And I think I had mentioned to you that the Alter Rebbe himself, he had married into a very wealthy family. The woman brought in a very large dowry, and he and his Rebbetzin gave 100% of it away tzedakah. So the Alter Rebbe himself lived a poverty-stricken life, although he had theoretically had the resources where he could have lived baravchus. So in the Igeres HaKodesh, over and over again, we have his fundraising letters. But his fundraising letters were not simply, hey, give money. But he goes into the inyanim of Kabbalah, how tzedakah saves you from death, how it brings you close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he goes into many details in Kabbalah about the koach of tzedakah and how it brings the geula, and how in some ways tzedakah can accomplish things that even Torah learning does not accomplish. So that's Igeres HaKodesh. Again, there are other topics as well. I want to emphasize, Igeres HaKodesh are not the totality of the letters of the Alter Rebbe. These are letters that his sons thought would be most relevant. In fact, Chabad later published a big, big volume called Igros Bal HaTanya, which are like all of the letters that they found. And, you know, it's interesting because those are letters that involve machloksim, etc., meaning some of them are more political because the Alter Rebbe had many, many opponents to his shita. And the Alter Rebbe's opponents were not just the Misnagdim, like the Vilna Gaon. He had opponents mainly among Hasidim because they did not like the intellectualization that he brought into Hasidus, right? Because whole Chabad is Chochma Bina Das. It's a Hasidus based on the intellect. And some Hasidim thought that was a betrayal of the Magid's teaching and ultimately the Baal Shem Tov teaching as well. They also did not like the fact that the Alter Rebbe brought in so much Kabbalah. It's interesting. It's almost like two different contradictions. Philosophy, Kabbalah. And they said that wasn't true either. In fact, the Hasidus of Poland, if you factor out the Alter Rebbe, was based on a reading of a pasuk in Habakkuk, a famous pasuk that the Gemara darshens. Tzadik b'emunasai yichya, which literally means a tzaddik lives with his emuna. So they read it, tzaddik b'emunaso yechaya, not yechya, but yechaya, which means a tzaddik's emuna gives life to his chassidim. Meaning there was a concept in much of non-Chabad chassidus that the Rebbe is your intermediary, that the Rebbe takes care of all of your spiritual needs, and your goal is to have emuna in the Rebbe, and the Rebbe will lift you up to the heights that you need to go. Now, it's interesting, whatever your view of what Chabad eventually became, and I don't want to talk about that in particular, the Alter Rebbe was absolutely opposed to the notion that the Rebbe is your intermediary. The Alter Rebbe basically said that you have to do your own Avodah, you have to develop your own Kesher, you have to develop your own relationship with God. In fact, they tell a very interesting story that there was another Rebbe that had Hasidim, and the Hasidim were very, very devoted. They would daven with a tremendous fire. So one of the Alter Rebbe's Hasidim said, I don't remember the name of the Rebbe they were talking about, but he says, let's just make up a name, Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron's Hasidim have such a fire that is burning inside of him that they were jealous. Why don't we have that? And the Alter Rebbe says, Rav Aaron's Hasidim don't have a fire burning inside of them, they have Rav Aaron burning inside of them. Meaning to say, what they've done is, they've just taken their Rebbe and, you know, they put it in. Says the Alter Rebbe said, I want you to have your own fire burning inside of you. And therefore it was, so as a result, the Alter Rebbe was actually very, very controversial in the Hasidic world, not only in the Misnagdic world. And Tanya itself was considered to be a very, very controversial work because it is on some level so rational and also so Kabbalistic, as opposed, for example, to the much shorter Verklich, so to speak, of the earlier Hasidic masters. I mean, anything from the Baal Shem Tov is like a short, like one line, snappy little vort, and the Tanya makes everything much more deeper, much more detailed, much more complicated in many, many ways, and some Hasidim thought that was a bit of a betrayal. That is why it's been well said that the Baal HaTanya is the most misnaged of all of the Gedolei Hasidus, and indeed he was a Litvak, he was a Litvisha, and in many, many ways he behaved like a Litvisha, meaning that he took a Hasidus and he tried to give it a very solid analytical foundation. I think that is why when the Hasidic movement had to decide who would meet with the Gra, who was opposed to Hasidus, they chose the Baal HaTanya, even though the Baal HaTanya was relatively young, because they rightly assumed, I think, that the Baal HaTanya would be the closest to the Shita of the Gra, and as a result, the Gra would be Makabel. As you know, it's very yadua that the Gra refused to meet with the Baal HaTanya, that they didn't meet at all, and the like. Now, of course, as we learned in Shari Yichud V'Amuna, there is a huge, huge machlokas between the Baal HaTanya and the Gra on the nature of Tzimtzum, where the Vilna God Tzimtzum is the idea that in order for God to create this world, he had to withdraw into himself. The Vilna Gaon understands that to be a literal process, that Hashem emptied the space from his presence and then created physical reality. The Baal HaTanya says that's impossible because there can be no place that is empty of God, and Tzimtzum is therefore only a metaphor. The Vilna Gaon considered that to be pantheism and idolatry by saying God is in the table, God is in me, etc., God is in the bathroom. That was a huge machloka, so I'm not suggesting the Gra and the Baal HaTanya were in agreement on everything. There was a major, major machlokas. But in terms of the overall approach to life, the importance of Torah learning, the importance of keeping halacha down to its all details, the mastery of halacha, the Baal HaTanya and the Gra were similar in that way. And it could be that the Gra did not want to meet with the Baal HaTanya precisely because if he would have met with the Baal HaTanya, that may have given a stamp of approval on other aspects of Hasidus, which the Gra could not approve. In other words, they send him their best candidate, but they're going to then use it as proof that he endorsed everybody else. So they say the Gra did not meet. The Chabad has a Mesira that although the Gra did not open the door, but he looked at the Baal HaTanya through a hole and he smiled, whatever. But he said, who knows if any of these things happened. It is brought down that when the Gra was nifter, the Gra was older than the Baal HaTanya. So some of the Chabad Hasidim, other Hasidim as well, made a party. They were rejoicing, and the Baal HaTanya was very, very angry. And he condemned, it's not in Igeres HaKadosh, but it's in the Chabad Sefer, Igros Baal HaTanya V'doro. And the Alter Rebbe said, not only are you Mavaza, a Gadol and a Kadosh, but there's no reason to rejoice, even the Shitasai, because you think your problems are over. He says, when the Gra's in Shemayim, he'll be a more powerful force against us. Don't think your problems are over. They might just be beginning, and the like. Okay, so that's Igeres HaKadosh. So the fifth and final portion of the Tanya is Kuntres Acharon, which simply means the last notebook. And these are actually notes from the Alter Rebbe on the Tanya itself, meaning to say the Alter Rebbe wrote Chelek Aleph of the Tanya, really. It's Sefer Shel Beinonim. And the Alter Rebbe wrote some notes in his own Tanya, so to speak. And mainly, it deals with, let's say, Kabbalistic questions and answers, in which somebody might say, oh, the Rebbe's statement in Perek Mem of Tanya contradicts the Arizal in Shar HaKavanos, or how does the Rebbe understand this passage in the Zohar, meaning it's kind of questions and contradictions the Tanya against other Sifrei Kabbalah or the Zohar, and Rav Shneur Zalman tries to answer those contradictions. Now, it's very short. Kuntres Acharon is only around 10 or 12 printed pages, but it goes through various Kabbalistic problems to resolve various contradictions, and that's why it's called Kuntres Acharon. And it was the Rebbe's own notes. This is actually very valuable. Very often you will find in many Svarim, the Mechaber of a Sefer goes over his own Sefer and puts in various questions and answers, and later, many years later, people find those things and they reprint it, because it's a very, very important important thing. So we're up to the Kuntres Acharon. So really, the Kuntres Acharon really compels us to review which is actually a good thing, review some of the things in Chelek Aleph of the Tanya, because everything in the Kuntres Acharon is connected to Chelek Aleph, not Beis, Gimel, or Dalet. So here we have to go over some stuff, and again, as we're leaving Tanya, it's kedai to review some of the Yesaidis. The Sefer overall, you'll recall, is called Likutei Amorim. Tanya is not the name that the Rebbe gave the Sefer at all. It's only called Tanya because the Brisa begins, the Sefer begins by quoting a Brisa, Tanya, just the first word. But the Sefer that the Alter Rebbe himself called, the entire Sefer, is Likutei Amorim, Anthology of Sayings. Now, in a way, this is a bit of a confusing title, because there is another Sefer, Likutei Amorim, and I have to check the date, which is a collection of the Divrei Torah of the Alter Rebbe's Rebbe, the Magid of Mezerich. The Magid of Mezerich's Sefer is called Likutei Amorim. Now, I have to check. It could be that the Magid of Mezerich's Sefer was not yet published. Sometimes these throne were published later. But it would seem a little odd that if the Magid of Mezerich's Sefer was already published, that the Alter Rebbe would take the same title. But of course, the Alter Rebbe's Talmud did the same thing to him. The Alter Rebbe's Talmud Muvak was Rav Aaron of Stressel Lezhe, it's a city. And Rav Aaron of Lezhe was in line. Many people thought he had learned with the Alter Rebbe for 30 years. And many people thought he should have been the next Rebbe. Instead, they went the hereditary route, and they made the Alter Rebbe's son to be the next Rebbe, who is known as the Middle Rebbe, because he was a Rebbe for only a short time. Rav Schneur Zalman was Rebbe for 30 years, and the Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson, was Rebbe for 30 years, and the Middle Rebbe is the one in the middle. So Rav Aaron of Streshel Lezhe, kind of, although he was the closest of all the Talmidim of Rav Schneur Zalman, is totally outside of Chabad. He did not become part of the Shalsheles of Chabad, but he wrote a whole sefer called Shar HaYichud V'Yemuna, which is the same name as, of course, Chelek Beis of the Tanya, in which he claims that Rav Schneur Zalman was very makatzer in Shar HaYichud V'Yemuna, which he was indeed, and therefore this is an elaboration. So Chabad's relationship to that Shar HaYichud V'Yemuna is a little bit ambivalent. Some people consider him to be disloyal because he did not stay in Chabad when the Alter Rebbe died. Others are still machshev him as the closest Talmud of the Alter Rebbe, and I just remember reading just casually that the last Rebbe, Rav Nachum Mendel, was looking at Rav Aaron's Sefer Shar Yichud V'Yemuna, and he shook his head and he said, "This is a deep Sefer." I mean, the Rebbe himself said this was an extraordinarily deep and thorough Sefer. But in a way, it's Mida Keneged Mida. The Alter Rebbe calls his Sefer by the same name as his Rebbe's Sefer. So the Alter Rebbe's Talmud calls his Sefer by the same name as the Alter Rebbe's Sefer. But be it as it may, it is called the Likutei Amorim. And again, why is the Sefer, again, it's kind of a review, why is the Sefer called Likutei Amorim? Because the Alter Rebbe says in his humility that all it is an anthology of statements from other sources, whether it's Chazal, Gemara, Medrash, Zohar, which is mentioned like hundreds of times, Kisvei Arizal. I'm not being machadesh anything of my own. It's mipi svarim, from svarim and sofrim, and even rabbis who were alive at the time. The Mesilas Yesharim, Ramchal makes the same point by saying, there's nothing new in my Sefer. I'm just telling you things you already know. In both cases, it's just not a true statement. The Tanya is filled with Chidushim, as is the Mesilas Yesharim, but that's why he called it Likutei Amorim. Chabad has a Mesira that the Svarim that the Alter Rebbe relied on the most, besides Gemara, Medrash, Zohar, besides those, is Maharal and the Shalah HaKadosh. Now, Maharal of Prague is actually the great-great-grandfather of the Alter Rebbe. Maharal of Prague is a direct ancestor of the Alter Rebbe. I think it's through his mother. And that is why the Maharal is considered to be an honorary chassid among chassidim. The Maharal was before the Baal Shem Tov. The Maharal was not a chassid. There was no movement called chassidus in the Maharal's time. And yet, chassidim, even before the Baal HaTanya, they were the ones who were learning Maharal before non-chassidim were. I mean, in the non-chassidic world, Maharal was not learned for hundreds and hundreds of years. In fact, you can even trace it. The modern rediscovery, so to speak, of the Maharal in the yeshiva world essentially comes from Rev Dessler and then Rev Huttner. Now, Rev Dessler and Rev Huttner are both 20th century, meaning in the 18th and 19th century, among the Litvisha, the Maharal was not, nobody paid particular attention to. And yet, among Hasidim, the Kisvei Maharal were always learned, and a part of it was the Yichas, the Maharal, it was reverse Yichas. The Maharal got grandfathered in because of the Baal HaTanya. In a way, that's why in Brisk you can learn the Beis HaLevi. Whatever. The Beis HaLevi does not have a Brisker Derech of learning, actually. So the truth of the matter is, had a Sefer like the Beis HaLevi been written by some other Gadol, they would not be Machshavit in Brisk. But since the Beis HaLevi is the father of Rav Chaim, and even more importantly, the grandfather of the Brisker Rav, actually even Rav Chaim in some ways, is grandfathered in because of the Brisker Rav, so as a result, the Beis HaLevi gets into the pantheon of Achronim that Briskers learn, and the Maharal had the same situation with Chassidus. The other Sefer that is said to have been a very great influence on the Baal HaTanya, and this is a Sefer that is to this day underutilized, unlike the Maharal that has been kind of discovered or rediscovered, although more people know about it than actually learn it, is we have the Shalah. Shalah is a Sefer abbreviation, Shnei Luchos Habris, and the Shalah was written by a Gadol, Rav Yeshaya Horowitz, who was the Rav of Frankfurt in the 1500s, 1600s, and then for the last decades of his life came to Yerushalayim, and he was the Rav of Yerushalayim, the Rav of Ashkenazim in Yerushalayim. And the Shalah is really, really, really an encyclopedic work. Baruch Hashem, they have new editions of the Shalah with wonderful indexes. Without an index, you're in big, big trouble, because the Shalah is a huge book. It's around, it's four big volumes. It's around 3,000 pages, and it just has everything. It's on Chumash, on Minhagim, on Halacha, on Kabbalah, but the structure is not a clear structure, so it would be very, very, very difficult to find things. But the Shalah was, in Europe for many, many years, a standard Musar Sefer that people would learn from. Again, as the generations got less able to concentrate on hard texts, it was used less and less, and now with the newer editions, maybe it'll come back a little bit. But the Shalah was, in fact, the Shalah actually is historically very, very important. The Shalah, they say, was the main source of bringing the Arizal's teachings to Poland and Russia. In other words, he was the one who took the teachings of the Ari and disseminated them through his writings. So, in fact, there's a whole process. How did Kabbalah reach Europe? The Ramak and the Arizal. And there were certain people who were in Eretz Yisrael, then they went to Europe, etc., and they had Talmidim in Europe, and they were the disseminators. And the Shalah HaKadosh was considered to be the primary, or one of the primary disseminators of Kabbalah. And once again, it is brought down, Chabad has a Mesira, that although the Alter Rebbe, not once in Tanya, directly quotes Maharal or the Shalah, he Pasha does not, he quotes others for it, but they say that these were kind of the sources which gave the Alter Rebbe kind of a sense of what his Shita would be in this. So the name of the whole Sefer, once again, is Likutei Amorim. Tanya is just the first word of the book. But Chelek Aleph of Tanya, which is the largest part of the Sefer, has a subtitle that is called Sefer Shel Beinonim, the work of the middle of the roaders. right? The book of the mediocre, you might say, although we'll see it doesn't really mean mediocre. What is the significance of that title, and what is the ultimate book about? So here, again, this is by way of Chazara, the Baal HaTanya develops the very revolutionary idea that a Beinoni does not mean a person that's equally balanced. Right, the Rambam, we have three terms, Tzaddik, Rasha, Beinoni. Rambam says you're a Tzaddik if 51% of your actions are mitzvos and 49% are averos. You're a Rasha if it's 51 bad and 49 good. And you're a Beinoni if it's 50-50. Now the problem is, of course, that by defining a Beinoni by somebody who is simply 50-50, I mean, that changes minute by minute, second by second. I mean, I wake up in the morning, you know, at 9 o'clock, I'm a Rasha, and then 9:01, I'm a Beinoni, and then 9:02, I'm a Tzaddik, and then 9:03, I'm a Rasha. It's very, very difficult to even work with a meaningful definition. So the Baal HaTanya's, and of course there are other Gemaras that say that even the greatest Amoraim said they were Beinonim. Rabbi says, I'm a Beinonim. How could that be? So the Baal HaTanya's revolutionary definition is that avada, to be a Beinoni, you have to be what we would call an absolute tzaddik. You serve Hashem with absolute purity in your machshava, in your thoughts, in your deeds, and in your speech. But what makes a person a Beinoni is they are still struggling with their animal soul. I mean, they say we have these two souls, called the Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara. We have the godly soul that seeks to do good. And we have the animal soul that is egotistical and that is selfish. The Beinoni lives in the world of struggle. And Enochinami, in that world of struggle, Hashem expects him to come out victorious. A Beinoni is supposed to be what we would call, in fact, sometimes even the Baal HaTanya, I think, slips a little bit. The Baal HaTanya sometimes, you know, you have to be a little careful. Sometimes when the Baal HaTanya says someone's a great tzaddik, he means he's doing the avoda of a Beinoni. So a Beinoni is somebody who serves Hashem, but he is still fighting the struggle because he has not destroyed the animal soul. It is still a poison within him. Again, and in fact, the Baal HaTanya's perhaps pessimistic statement is that there's no guarantee you'll ever be a tzaddik in the sense of killing the Yetzer Hara. That's not an automatic process. Sometimes Hashem will give you a gift. Sometimes he won't. But again, the importance of this is because Hasidim came to him and they basically said, you know, Rebbe, I've been serving Hashem so long and I still have these urges, I still have these taivas. When will they go away? When will I be victorious over them? And the Baal HaTanya's words are, maybe your role in life is to be in this struggle. And you're giving more nachas to Hashem than even the person who doesn't sin, who doesn't have that struggle. In other words, your avoda is not to get out of the category of Beinoni. Your avoda is to remain a Beinoni and be miskaber over the nefesh habahamis in dibor, in maisa, and even in machshava. And he says, the nachas ruach you're giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes from your struggle. So, Rav Shneur Zalman basically says, what we might consider the greatest tzaddik in the world could still be a Beinoni. 100%, right? Because a Beinoni lives in the world of struggle, in which the concept is you have this animal soul that's pulling you down, and your job is to take the light of your divine soul and combat that animal soul. And you live in a state of war. Now, obviously that could get a person depressed, and that's why you'll remember the Alter Rebbe has a number of prakim, which are devoted to the idea of simcha, of joy. You know, there's even a phrase in English, the happy warrior, they used to call him, Al Smith, whatever, the famous American politician, that the war is your job. Yeah.
Is the nefesh of Hamas and the Yetzirah basically the same thing, or different?
It seems to be almost the same thing. Almost the same thing. In fact, at various points, the Alter Rebbe switches them himself. But the key point of the Tanya is that the fact that you're still struggling is not a sign of failure, and it's not a sign of weakness, and it's not a sign that you haven't been doing your job. Rather, that is your job. And therefore, even when you fail, just come back the next day. In fact, the Alter Rebbe basically says, as soon as you fail, you're a Russia. Okay? But every rush, if you do one sin, you're a Russia. He says, it's not a question of 50%. One Aveira, you are a Russia. But the good thing is, you can always make yourself a Beinoni. Again, because you're living in that world of struggle. So the point basically is that the Alter Rebbe says, in a way, it's almost a predetermination in this way, that you can't make yourself into a tzaddik, but that's not your job. In other words, semantically, that's what you mean. You can make yourself into the righteous and holy person that a Beinoni is supposed to be, and that gives infinite nachas to Hashem. But to make yourself a tzaddik, meaning I've destroyed my Yetzer Hara, or put it another way, I've converted the Nefesh Bahamas into a source of spiritual strength, that, he says, there is no guarantee. It is that does not come from your Aveda. That's a matana, and Hashem may give it to you, or Hashem may not give it to you. That is maybe your schar in Olam Haba. That's not a goal. Now, it seems to me that maybe, that the Ramchal is cholek on this. You know, the Ramchal in Mesilas Yesharim talks about the different madregos of how a person gets closer to Hashem. Remember the whole ladder of the Ramchal. It's based on a brisa. The lowest level is zehirus. The lowest level. The lowest level basically means don't do any averus. That's the bottom level. Right? Don't do averus, do all of the mitzvahs. That's the lowest level. And then we progress from there higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. That's why some people say, what am I learning Mesilas Yesharim for? I mean, the lowest level is already beyond me. Okay. But the highest level is the level called Kedusha. And Kedusha basically says you've reached a madrega where you are like a mizbeach. Every bit of food you take in is like a korban being brought to Hashem, because every part of your life is totally devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This seems to correspond to what the Alter Rebbe would call a tzaddik. And yet the Ramchal says every single person can reach this level of Kedusha. And in fact, in a very famous passage, which you have to be masber, the Ramchal says that the storekeeper or the shoemaker or the tailor who spends his whole day in trying to make a living can reach the same level of Kedusha as the Talmud Chacham that is sitting and learning. It's within the grasp of everyone to focus everything on Avodas Hashem. So it's confusing to compare Mesilas Yesharim and Tanya because they don't use the same vocabulary. I mean, they don't use the same terms. But nevertheless, it seems that the Ramchal's definition of Kedusha is you've basically destroyed the Yetzer Hara, and that corresponds to the Alter Rebbe's definition of Tzaddik. And yet the Ramchal says that's accessible to everybody. The Alter Rebbe says it's not. And that is why Sefer Shal Beinonim should not mean Bedavka, the book of the mediocre. Lehepech, the Beinoni, right? What an old saying of Chabad, before I learned Tanya, I thought I was a tzaddik. After I learned Tanya, it says, Halvai, I will be Zocha to be a Beinoni. Beinoni is what we would call the greatest tzaddik, yeah.
Rebbe, how does one make shameless between the approach of the Bala Tanya, where being a tzaddik is a matana, and the pasuk from Moshe saying it's not far from you, it's not in the heavens?
Well, first of all, keep in mind that the pasuk, Ki karov elecha hadover miod, it is near to you, it is accessible to you, is the motto of the Tanya. The Tanya himself, right, in the cover, which the Rav Shneur Zalman wrote, he said, Miyusad al ha-pasuk ki karo ve'lecha ha-dovar ma'oz v'picha v'rov v'la-so-so. This sefer is based on the pasuk that it's karo ve'lecha. So the Bala Tanya says, b'feirish. What is it? What is close to you? B'picha, with your mouth and with your heart, you can serve Hashem. That's a beinoni, meaning you still have this poison within you. Don't think you'll get rid of it. It's going to be a perpetual struggle. But you can be misgaber over it. And that's something that's within your koach. So the Torah is not saying you'll be a tzaddik in the sense that the Alter Rebbe uses the word tzaddik. But with your disability, you can be misgaber. And not only that, but you're giving nachas ruach to Hashem by your struggle. That's a very important point. Again, I know that a lot of this is review, but as we're coming to the end, the review is kedai. Remember that the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe says in the Hakdama, that why did he write this book, Sefer Shel Beinonim in particular? Because Hasidim were coming to him for chizuk. They were coming to him for guidance in Avodas Hashem. They were not asking the questions, let's say, that sometimes the modern Chozer B'Tshuva asks, how do I know there's God? How do I know there's Torah B'Sinai? They weren't asking that, right? These were people who believed in Hashem. They believed in Torah and mitzvahs. They were doing mitzvahs. Right? They were not people who needed any proof of anything. They were not asking for any proofs at all. But they were asking, how do I serve Hashem? How do I love Hashem? How do I have Yiras Hashem? Why do I still have these thoughts that trouble me? Why don't I have enthusiasm in davening? And the Alter Rebbe met with them personally, but then he said, it got harder and harder, he had more and more Hasidim. And he did a lot of things. I mean, we normally don't talk about the super efficiency of Gedolim, but the Alter Rebbe happened to be an amazingly efficient person. Because besides being a total master of Shas and Paiskin, and a master of Kabbalah, and a leader of thousands of people, and a tremendous fundraiser, and a tremendous administrator, and an organizer. I mean, he really was many, many, many things. And he basically said he didn't have time to be able to meet with all the people that wanted to meet with him. So he decided to set down some fundamental teachings in writing. And he then said, and the writings would be sent to different communities. And he then said, and if you don't understand what I'm saying, go to the chachamim, go to the senior, the elder chassidim in the community, and they will explain it to you. And then he says to the elder chassidim, don't be modest and pretend you don't understand. You know, you have an achrayas too, to try to teach people the derech of Hashem. So in many ways, although Tanya is a very intellectual book, but remember that it was designed also to give chizuk and practical hadracha. So the concept that you're still living with struggle and that's okay is a very, very practical lesson you walk away with. Even if you don't understand anything that Tanya is saying, if you walk away with that idea, you actually have something very, very useful. And one has to remember that particularly Sefer Shel Beinonim was intended to be on some level, although it's really advanced, but on some level, it's a very practical, down-to-earth statement of, listen, I'm going to live with different struggles. I have this animal soul. I'm not going to get rid of it. It's going to hang around with me all the time. But I can defeat it. I can prevent it from controlling me. I am the master of my fate, so to speak. I make the decisions. And really, it's building on Chazal, Hakobi de Shemayim, Chutz Meir Shemayim, and that is what Moshe Rabbeinu promises in the Torah. Hashem promises, Ki Karo Ve'Lecha Hadover Ma'ed. You can do it. Don't give up. And know as well that all of these struggles are giving nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire to have a Dira B'Tachtonim, a dwelling place in this lowly world, bedafka, right? That's the famous expression. It's from a medrash, but Everybody knows it from the Tanya. And the Baal Tanya himself is quoting a Medrash that Nisave HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatest taiva is to have a dira b'tachteinim, a dwelling place, not with the malachim, but a dwelling place in the darkest corners. And I bring Hashem's light into the darkness, and that is the great, great nachas that one gives HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, one has to wonder, what is the avodah of a tzaddik? The avodah of a benoni is to fight the nefesh ha-bahamas. The tzaddik doesn't have a nefesh ha-bahamas. The tzaddik either was born that way, or through his years of avodah, the Eibishter gave him a gift, which is, you can't guarantee that. So what's the avodah of a tzaddik? It's a big problem exactly. What's a tzaddik supposed to do? So Chabad has a Maseira that after the Alter Rebbe wrote Sefer Shel Beinonim, he wrote another Sefer called Sefer Shel Tzaddikim, and that Sefer got burnt. No one ever saw it, so we don't really know what the Aveda of the Tzaddik is. And Chabad has a Maseira that Lakutei Maharan, which is Breslov, is called Sefer Shel Rishayim. This is not as bad as you might think. You hear Sefer Shel Rishayim, so you hear, he's calling him Rishayim. No, not at all. Rather, the concept was, a Rasha is somebody who has wandered away from Hashem so to such a far extreme degree that they feel that their matzav is hopeless. So, the concept was that they said Breslov will enable the person who is so far away to come back, and then we can make him Chabad, we can teach him Tanya, and the like. So Breslov is like a preliminary step to take the Russia, to bring him up to a Beinoni, and then you look at Sefer Shel Beinoni. So it's not pejorative, maybe it's patronizing, that might be the case, but it's not pejorative, it's not negative. It recognizes that Breslov has a special place for people who feel very, very, very rachuk. And this can give them a sense of chizah going back. Yeah.
I heard the lesson said is like why is it always schleppers?
Yeah.
Because they know they're nothing. That's how they can get to the highest levels.
That's right. But of course, that could be the greatest closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu can come from that sense of nothing. It says in Kehelas, Shlomo, we just read Kehelas on Sukkot. So it says, Ulesimcha mazu aisha. Now Shlomo HaMelech is saying, what's the point of simcha in Olam Hazeh? But the Sfas Emes touches up, Ulesimcha, what gives you simcha? Ma, when you think you're like nobody. Ma zu aisha. The ma, the sense of what am I, can bring me to a real simcha in life, because then I'm makir taif for everything that a Kadosh Baruch Hu does. Now, So that's point number one of Sefer Shel Beinonim, the idea of the Beinoni, the idea of the struggle, and the idea that it's kara ve'lecha hadavar ma'ayit, and one should not think that they're going to destroy the nefesh ha-bahamas, but they contain it, they control it, they direct it, they have a kayach to be miskaber, and this is based on another famous saying that the Alter Rebbe uses a number of times, ha-moach sholet al halev. The mind can control the heart. You have the heart, you have the emotion, you have feelings, you have turbulence that wants to go a certain way. That's why it's called Chabad. Chabad, Chochma Bina Das. The mind can control. I think I mentioned to you a board from the Chassam Sefer that Melech, what is a king? Rashi Tevis. Mayach, the brain, the mind, lave, the heart, kolayis, the kidneys, which was considered to be the seat of sexual passion. A melech is where the mayach, the mind, controls the passions and the emotions. The opposite of melech, kalem is kolayos lave moach, where the passions and the emotions rule over the mind. Kalem means destroyed, to be destroyed. Right, so that's why, again, this was an issue. The Alter Rebbe took issue with much of the early Hasidus, which emphasized emotion. The Alter Rebbe, as a Litvak, was very, very suspicious of emotions, because emotions can sometimes give you a lot of arousal to Hashem, but then emotions come and go, right? You go to a Kal Brach Minyan and you're dancing on a table and you're very, very excited, and then, you know, it can turn into getting drunk or turn into something else. The Alter Rebbe rather said, instead of coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the emotion, you come through the mind, but eventually the Moach is sholeit al halev. And the Alter Rebbe said that emotions can be generated from the mind. Now, it's hard for us to fully understand this, but this brings us to another major, major point. And that is, the Alter Rebbe quotes many times in Sefer Shel Beinonim let me point out that if you were to greatly, greatly simplify and distort, I'm the first to tell you that this is a gross oversimplification, but just as a great basic oversimplification, early Hasidus emphasized the concept of regesh, the concept of emotion, feeling, devotion to Hashem, love of Hashem, yiras Hashem, simcha. Now, one of the attacks against that was, and this is Rav Chaim Volozhiner in the Nefesh HaChaim, is that when you predicate too much of your spiritual life on inner emotional states, that could result in assigning less importance to the details of halacha, because sometimes the details of halacha seem to interfere with inner spirituality. An example might be, let's say that Zaman Kriya Shema is 7:30 in the morning. And at 7:30 you are dead tired. And if you're going to say Kriya Shema 7:30 in the morning, there'll be no kavana, and you know, you're going to rush through it. But if you could sleep until 9 o'clock, you'll be makabel v'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. So a person might say, isn't the whole point of Kriya Shema to be makabel Hashem and to love Hashem? I can do it much better at 9 o'clock. So there's a tendency, again, the fancy English word for this is, that this is an antinomian tendency. Antinomian basically means against law, against rules. And you see this in the world today. You meet people who, on some level, are very spiritual. But sometimes Bedavka, a very spiritual person, says, I can't live with all of these rules. I can't live with all of these restrictions. I want to connect to God. Does God care if I rip toilet paper on Shabbos or I turn on an electric light? I can't. It distracts me. It takes me away. So this, on some level, again, I am oversimplifying, was a sakana of earlier Hasidus, and this was one of the sakanas that the Gra identified. Because the Gra said, if you're emphasizing, and Rav Chaim Volozhiner is writing about this, especially in the Nefesh HaChaim, if you're emphasizing inner spirituality, a person might consider the Maisa to be less significant. And therefore, what does Rav Chaim Volozhiner write in the Nefesh HaChaim? He says, listen, kavana and emotions are wonderful things, but the ikar is to do the Maisa of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of the Dikduke Halacha. And if you think you can serve Hashem without following all of the Halachos, you're making a tremendous, tremendous mistake. If you look at the Nefesh HaChaim, you see over and over again that he writes about the fact that any type of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem that's not Mekushar to a Dikduk, to an exactitude in Halacha, is a false avodah. He is writing this against Hasidim in a very nice way. That's a whole other interesting issue. His gisha to Hasidus was very, very different than the Gra. The Gra was a bit militant. The Gra put them in Chayrim. The Gra signed the Chayrim. And the Gra refused to meet. Now, it's interesting, Rav Chaim Volozhiner did not sign, although there were other many Rabbanim who signed with the Gra. Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the Talmud Muvuk of the Gra, never signed the Chayrim. Well, why not? He was Rav Volozhiner. So some say, well, he thought it was not kavodik for him to sign on the Chayrim of his Rebbe. Yitachen. It's also Yitachen, this is a bit more daring, that Pashut, he did not agree with his Rebbe on that prat. That he felt that although he agreed with his Rebbe Shita generally, but you have to be mityaches to Hasidim with friendship and warmth and to win them over. So in the yeshiva of Elazhin, there were Hasidish students. Rav Itzel of Elazhin, Rav Chaim's only son, had Hasidish Sfarim that he would learn. And in the Nefesh HaChaim, although Rav Chaim gives much criticism of Hasidus, he doesn't mention Hasidim by name at all, and it's always very gentle, and he calls them Ovdei Hashem, and he talks about their Kavanas are good. It's a very, very different type of approach. It's a much sweeter and gentler approach, but nevertheless, Rav Chaim's argument, in fact, if you had to summarize, the main argument of Nefesh HaChaim is Hamaiseh Hu Ho'ikar. So, Hasidus emphasized, right, the Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, the emotion, the feeling. The Misnagdim, the Gra, Rav Chaim Elazhin emphasized, you have to keep Halacha. So, the Baal HaTanya had a difficult goal for himself. The Kutzke Rebbe once said, when you walk in the middle of the road, you get hit with traffic coming from both sides. In those days it would be horses, today it would be cars. And the Baal HaTanya is saying, basically, how important Maisa is and how important emotion is at the same time. So the emphasis on Maisa antagonized some of the Hasidim, and the emphasis on emotion antagonized some of the Misnagdim. Right? So the Baal HaTanya got it from both ways, but this is why Rav Shneur Zalman weaves back and forth. So, in the first part of Sefer Shel Beinonim, after he discusses the Nefesh HaBahamas, he emphasizes the importance of doing the mitzvahs kahalacha with all of the diktukim, with all of the proper details, that you cannot bring godliness into the world except by doing the mitzvahs properly. And if Zman Kriya Shema is 7:30, then reading Kriya Shema 7:31 is not going to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. And for Kerek, you could be Machriv Olamos, that's just like the Nefesh HaChaim. But then, he devotes a tremendous amount of time to explaining the importance of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. And here, he brings a mimer, which he doesn't attribute, I think it is Taka is from the Shalah, that says, a mitzvah without kavana is like a guf without a neshama. A guf without a neshama. And then he brings from the Zohar a statement that, again, he repeats many, many times, both in the Tanya and in the Geras HaKodesh and in the Kuntres Acharein, that says, dechilu urechimu. Dechilu is yira, fear, trembling. Rechimu is love. Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, are trei gatvim. They are the two wings that allow your mitzvos to fly up to Shamayim. And then he makes a very interesting point. Wings are not part of the life of the bird itself. According to Halacha, if a bird is missing its wings, it's still a kosher bird. It's not a treif. It's able to live without wings. So wings are not the definition of the bird, but wings enable the bird to fly. So too, Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem are not the guf of your obligations. The guf of your obligations are the Torah and the mitzvahs. But the Avas Hashem and the Yiras Hashem are what enables your mitzvahs to fly upwards. They tell the story with the Baal Shem Tov, that the Baal Shem Tov once came to a shul of Misnagdim, and the Baal Shem Tov said, this base medrash is so full of Torah and mitzvahs. So people thought he was complimenting them. Oh, Baruch Hashem, we're full. I meant to say, it's all down here. Nothing went up. Nothing went up. You didn't have the Avas Hashem and the Yiras Hashem. It didn't go up. Now, Kidarko Bakaydash, the Baal HaTanya never just gives you a mimer. You know, we could be content. It goes up. But he explains, what does it mean to go up? And where does it go to? Right? Again, in the Shita of Chabad, everything has to be explained in a lot of detail. And sometimes one of the dangers you have in learning Tanya, which is why it's hard, is that the details are so many and so labyrinthine that you can sometimes lose the general idea. So remember the mimer of the Zohar, even if you don't get all the details, and that is the chilu or rechimu are the trei gadfin, gadfin are wings in Aramaic, that bring your mitzvos solik li'ela, it brings your mitzvos upwards, kadam Hashem, in the before Hashem.
The Sefer Chinuch, does he take a different approach than the mitzvahs? Essentially, it's about who you are, and they're like cognitive behavior type thing, that they make you into a better person, but the Iker is who you are. Is that the accurate way of the Sefer Chinuch? That is a different approach?
Well, yeah. I think the difference basically is the idea of Kabbalah. I mean, that's really the idea, that in Kabbalah, the concept of the mitzvos are not only vehicles. I mean, they are that too, but they're not only vehicles to make you better. They are vehicles that bring Hashem into the world, and therefore, it's not just about you. In fact,
yes, davening Kriya Shema is about him, but it really is about what Kriya Shema does to you. But keep the rules, but
Well, as they say, I think this is a different perspective. It's not a contradictory one. Both of them can be true. But there is the idea that godliness comes in. Because again, let me explain the idea a little bit. Kabbalistically, the idea is that the Torah, the Halacha, whether it's Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebal Peh, this represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. This is the revelation of God's will. And because God is one, there's only one God, and God cannot be divided, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Metzius is the same thing. There is no difference. See, with a human being, we could say, my essence and my will are two different things. I am a person and I have a will. So there's a will and there's a person. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Rambam himself says we can only say the words, we don't understand this. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what is called an Achdus HaPashut means a simple unity that cannot be divided, Hashem's will is the same as Hashem. It's undivided. Mimela, the Torah is God. The Torah, which is Hashem's will, is God. So therefore, when I reveal Hashem's will by carrying out the Torah, I am literally bringing Hashem into the world. I am giving him a dira b'tachtonim, I am giving him a dwelling place. It's not only about I become a better person, I become somebody more worthy of reward. Rather, the giloy of the ratzon of Hashem in Olam Hazeh is bringing Hashem into the world, because the Ratzon of Hashem and the Metzius of Hashem is exactly the same. So, on one hand, the Maisa is Iker, on the other hand, the Chilu Rechimu are the Trei Gadfin. Now, what is the source of the Chilu Rechimu? So, this is yet another idea in the Sefer Shulbeni. So, the Alter Rebbe says there are two types of Ava and Yira. And by the way, let me just clarify something. Again, he is not using the common. Okay, let me first mention how Rishayim talked about this. Rishayim already, going back to Rav Sadja Gaon and maybe even earlier, identified two types of Yiras Hashem. There are two types of Yiras Hashem that exist. The lower type of Yiras Hashem is what we call Yiras HaOnesh. Yiras HaOnesh means I'm afraid of punishment. I better behave because there's Gehenna. There's consequences. That's a lower type of Yira because you're really acting out of fear of punishment or consequences. The higher form of Yira, Rav Sadja Gaon says, is what we would call awe, reverence, Yiras HaRomamas. It's not that I'm scared of anything, but rather Hashem is so powerful, so great, so magnificent, that I stand in awe and reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. Now we know this even in human beings, right? A person who might have, right, if the Queen of England or the President walks in, okay, again with the President Trump, it seems to be that there's not that much Yiras HaRemimus, certainly, but whatever it would be. I can't decide. I mean, even if you like the guy, I don't think Remimus is the appropriate emotion. But still, Chashuv, you know, one has a sense of Remimus. That's why the Gemara says in Brachos that one should go see even non-Jewish kings, because you get a sense of awe that you can then transpose to Mashiach. So those are two types of Yira, right? There's the Yiras HaOnesh, Yiras HaRemimus. And with love as well, there are kind of two types of love. There is the love that comes from gratitude, that God has done so much good for me, that I love him because he has done everything for me. He's given me life, everything. And then there's another love, which is actually very connected to Yiras HaRemimus, which is the love you have for that which is utterly perfect. It's almost an aesthetic love. Not that because he's done good things for me, but there's a love in terms of the shleimus abayre, which is makusher actually to Yiras HaRemimus. Now, when the Baal HaTanya uses Yira, he doesn't even talk about Yiras HaOnesh that much, although he says it is necessary, but Lamaisa, when he talks about Yira 95% of the time, he is already talking about Yiras HaRemimus. Or when he talks about love, he does talk about those different types of love. But when he says there are two types, sources, he's referring to the following. There is what is called dechilu urechimu tivim. There is natural love and yira in the heart of every Jewish person. It is already there. It is not something you have to work on. It is not something you have to develop. It is TV, and he describes it as Yerusha Me'aveisenu. Again, it's not clear. On one hand, he says it's natural. On the other hand, he says it's like a spiritual inheritance from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Is that? Yeah. Okay. In other words, okay. But the point is, it is there when you are born. It is in your heart. But your goal is to take it out of what is called talumai slibai, in the hidden recesses, and to actually bring it out as a conscious feeling. Right? So the Aveda of a Benoni is to take the dechilu urechimu that is there beteva, and But teva means it's subconscious, it's unconscious, it's there. In fact, he points out, the Baal HaTanya pointed out, this is why even a Jew who is very far from Hashem, at critical moments, is willing to give his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So you have many stories of totally non-religious Jews that they would give their life for God. Why? Because...
What?
Huh?
Did you tell us one of those stories?
Yeah, like the Nazis, they have stories about a non-religious person was commanded to jump on a Sefer Torah, desecrate a Sefer Torah, and he was totally not religious. And he refused, the Nazis killed him. You may remember Daniel Pearl, unfortunately, very, very sad story. Daniel Pearl was a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and he was kidnapped, I think it was by ISIS, at the very beginning of ISIS massacres. And they did a YouTube. He was killed on YouTube. I mean, they took it off. It's not playing anymore. And they put a they blindfolded him, and they put a sword, a knife against his neck, and they said, you know, acknowledge Muhammad or else. And he said, I am a Jew and I will always be a Jew. And they slit his throat. He was not a religious. He was not an observant Jew. But he gave his life al kiddush Hashem. So the Baal HaTanya says, where does that come from? Because in your heart there is love of God and fear of God. By the way, he defines fear in a very unusual way. Not onesh and not romimus, although he talks about both. But the fear is to be separated from God. It's kind of a component of love. Love is my desire to be close, And the yira is my fear of being separated. That's in you. But most of the time, you're not aware of it. Most of the time, you know, it doesn't come out. But in extreme situations, that subconscious force, what later Hasidus called the pintal yid. Again, the Baal Tanya does not use that particular phrase, but that's the pintal yid, that little spark that's within you. So the Baal Tanya says it's already in you, but your job is to be megala. And he talks about different ways. We'll have to keep for next time. What are the different ways to be megala? But he says, when you're megala, what's already in your panemius, that is what is called, the term of the Zohar, re'usa deliba. Re'usa deliba, again, this is an important term, is the desire of the heart. You make it a conscious desire. Your idea is to make it a conscious desire, and that's called re'usa deliba. But then he says, there's another thing that you can do. And that is, even if you don't have the koach to turn it into re'usa deliba, you have the koach to turn it into machshava tova. So these are two terms here. Machshava tova, re'usa deliba. The difference is, re'usa deliba is when you genuinely feel that emotional passion to love Hashem and fear Hashem. In the sense, fear meaning I fear being cut off from the love. But let's say I don't consciously feel that as a strong emotion. I don't feel it. I know it's there, but I don't feel it. So then there's a secondary level where if I think about it, and I know that that's what I should be feeling, and I wish that is what I should be feeling, that is called machshava tova. So there's re'usa deliba, and then there's machshava tova. And the Baal HaTanya says the following. When the Zohar says, dechilu urechimu, brings your mitzvahs up to Shemayim, technically, that's re'usa deliba, meaning you have to reach a level where you mamish have the feeling. But he says, this is a beautiful, innovative interpretation. There's a Gemara that says, machshava tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzaref l'maisa. Now, let's look at how everybody translates that statement. Everybody translates the statement Machshava Tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaref L'Maisa the following way. That if I intend, I have a thought to do a mitzvah, and I'm not able to do the mitzvah for circumstances beyond my control, so Hashem counts the Machshava as if I did it. That is how everybody translates it. And if you look at Art Scroll, that is how, I didn't check, but I'm sure that's how they would translate it. But the Baal HaTanya says, that's not what the words mean. Machshava Tova mitzaref l'maisa means he combines it with a maisa. If it just means I didn't do it, it should have said, in fact, there's another Maimer Chazal. Chashav Adam l'aseis mitzvah v'layasa ma'ila l'apakasa kilu asa. There is such a Maimer Chazal. And most people say that's just another way of saying Machshava Tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzarif L'Maisa. Says the Baal HaTanya, no. Rather, it means like this. Let's say I do a Maisa. And I'm trying to be Ma'orer by thinking about the godless of Hashem and by thinking about the kindness of Hashem. I'm trying to arouse my subconscious emotion of the Chilu Urechimu. But I haven't gotten to a feeling state. I don't have re'usa deliba, but I have the machshava that that's what I want. Hashem will add that machshava to your maisa, and that will be the jet engine that will propel it up to Shemayim. So that's the chiddush, meaning to say, the Baal HaTanya, although I don't know what the difference is, he differentiates between what you might call the natural propulsion of a mitzvah, versus the special chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaref L'maisa. The natural kayach that brings your mitzvahs up to Shemayim is the dechilu urechimu of Re'usa Deliba. And if all you have is what is called Machshava Tova, that alone would not be enough. But that's the chiddush, that's the chesed, Machshava Tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaref L'maisa. Okay, that's the chiddush. Now, he says there's a third level, right? So, highest level, I'm going down. Highest level is what's called Re'usa Deliba. Next level is Machshava Taiva. Third level is you just do the mitzvah and you don't even think about it. Now, it's true, you still have the Dechilu Rechimu in your subconscious nature, but you're not activating it in any way. You're doing mitzvah Tanashim Nulumada. You're just doing things out of habit. So on that, the Baal HaTanya says, your mitzvahs don't go anywhere at that point. Again, we'll discuss that. There's a little more detail that I'll give tonight. Because he says, the idea that even your natural love and fear bring your mitzvahs up to Hashem is only if you activate it by either the higher Re'usa Deliba or by the Machshava Taiva. But if you don't activate it, it's of no particular benefit to you. But the Baal HaTanya says, when you later do tshuva, retroactively, all that you did superficially gets elevated. In other words, this is the meaning of the statement. A person should always learn Torah and do mitzvahs, even not lishma. So the Baal HaTanya learns, not lishma means without dechilu urechimu. Shemitoch shalo lishma, from not doing it lishma, you will come to lishma. So you hear the kinech, meaning to say, when you do tshuva, lemafreya, Baruch Hashem, all of those thousands and thousands and thousands of mitzvahs that are lying on the floor, they will be elevated and picked up. This is an extremely important point, because otherwise you understand what a person might say. A person might say, hey, I do mitzvahs, I don't have the feelings, I'm not even able to think about Avos HaShem, so maybe I shouldn't do anything at all. Right? It's a good taina. In fact, some Hasidim said this. This is what Nefesh HaChaim, you know, etc. The answer is, no, do it, do it, do it. Because when you eventually, and in fact, the Baal HaTanya says, betach, you will do tshuva either in this Gilgal or another Gilgal. For sure, you're eventually going to do tshuva, and then you'll have millions and millions of mitzvahs that are now going to be elevated. Right? So these are two terms, Re'usa Deliba and Machshava Taiva, and these are focusing on only one part of Avos Hashem Yiras Hashem, and that is the part that is called Musteres Belibe, that you're born with. Now, we're then going to say that there is a higher level of Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem that you actually create from your own seichel. And that's called Dechilu Urechimu Sichliim. And that's not, again, it's very docistic to differentiate between Dechilu Urechimu Tiviim that you bring out with your Machshava versus the Chilu Urechimu Sichliim, which you create with your Machshava. But they are going to be different. But in terms of the trajectory, it's more or less the same. And that is, there's the Re'usa Deliba, and then there's the Machshava Tova. So the two steps are virtually the same. So basically, bottom line is that they both work the same, but the Baal HaTanya will explain why. Again, I am focusing on the Kuntres Acharon, believe it or not, because in the Kuntres Acharon, of all of the parts of the Tanya, this is the part of the Tanya that he is Masbaran. So we're reviewing that as well. That he will say that ultimately you need both types of love and fear, both that which is Tivi and that which is Sichli, even though the steps of Re'usa Deliba and Machshava Taiva turn out to be the same. Okay, but we'll discuss why in your Avodah you need both types of fear. Okay? We'll stop here, so next week we'll go right through this. Again, I anticipate, just for people who need to know, that maybe another 2 or 3 weeks, and then we'll have to pick a new Mixaya. Okay, for the next 2 or 3 weeks, we'll work on this.